The retirement and IRA show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us this morning as certified financial planner Jim Saulnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
On today's show, we are going to answer more listener emails. Just a sample of those. We've got an email asking us what to do with an excess contribution they made into their IRA. We've got a follow-up email on something we've answered in the past regarding moving money from an IRA back into a 401k. Usually, movement is the other direction, but on occasion, it makes sense to move it back or even to a new 401k. So we've also got a question that comes up quite a lot: should I be contributing to my Roth 401k or my traditional 401k at work, or a combination of the two? So welcome to today's show. This is being broadcast for the first time live on April 8th, 2017. And I'm here with Jim Saulnier, who turned on his microphone.
I did.
So when he speaks, we all can hear.
You can hear?
Yeah, it's quite an upgrade from sometimes when we fire the show up, but this is a live recorded show. No live calls today, but someday we might do that again. We get so many emails now, I'm not sure we ever have to do that. But
well, aren't we still supposed to be moving forward with the Retirement and IRA Show live?
How could we possibly have time to do that when we have all these emails?
Well, the emails will be, you're assuming when we start and Facebook living this thing or whatever it is you want it to do, that we're going to just be inundated with calls. I have a feeling no one will call, or very few, at least at first, until people get used to listening to us around 2 o'clock Mountain Time every Tuesday off of Facebook Live.
Speaking of that,
yes.
I'll plant this in your mind. In the fall, so starting the end of August, going into September, we will have to pick an alternate recording day.
Oh.
Either or go earlier in the day.
Ooh.
I had an unavoidable scheduling conflict in Tuesday afternoons.
Well, we may have to address that on another time, yes. Not necessarily while we're recording.
While you like to bring up random things, maintenance, administrative issues from the office. This is a good time for us to meet. We're focused on one another.
So we're talking.
There's no one here to interrupt us.
True. Except our listeners are saying, get on with it. So I will address that. But the whole point of the Facebook Live idea was we were going to take calls during a certain day and a certain time. We originally thought it would be every Tuesday, 2 to 4 Mountain Time, and people would be able to actually call into the office as we're recording the coming week's podcast and ask us questions live as we're answering email questions. So if we're still going to do that, we have to practice on that for sure. Because we do have other people who want to be on the show. I told you there's a money manager gentleman who wants to come on our show and talk a little bit about global investing trends, not specific investments, but talk more in the line of where they, as a money management firm, are placing money. So I thought that would be a good part to talk about. He's willing to come on maybe once a month, give us an overview of where his firm sees the markets, what's overvalued, what isn't, and why. I thought it would be a pretty good addition. And then, of course, Travis, the CFA, Chartered Financial Analyst, who works for us but lives in Georgia, he is going to be coming on the show and teaching people a little bit more about portfolio management for the do-it-yourselfers. We have a lot of do-it-yourselfers. So he'll try explaining to them, excuse me, what Sharpe ratios are, what R-squared is, beta, standard deviation, correlation, all these types of elements that he monitors as he manages portfolios. He said he can come on and teach people about what some of these ratios are, MPT, modern portfolio theory, statistics, things like that. So I thought that would be a nice addition as well to the show. But these people need to call in order to do it, because the asset manager is in Ohio, and Travis, of course, is in Georgia.
Oh, they're not flying out to our studio.
They're not going to fly out to this amazing studio.
It's a lovely
studio.
Place to visit.
It is. It's an amazing studio. But they won't be coming out. So these are some of the changes that perhaps I should have shared with you earlier in the year that I see happening with the Retirement and IRA show, hence the need for a third hour, which is something else we can chat about.
Hmm. Well, the challenge then is going to be if we have, what's the guy from Georgia's name?
Travis.
Travis. Say we have Travis on the line and someone wants to call and ask a question while Travis is on the line.
He doesn't want to take any live calls. He's a little hesitant until he does it a few times.
Well, I know, but eventually, now you're asking me to hook up two phones in here. That's the only way to be on one call and get another
one. I told Travis I wouldn't put him on live, and I kind of made that promise to him. Maybe we'll break him in slowly.
Okay.
So for right now, I wouldn't worry about it.
Radio is scary. Takes a lot of practice. We went to all kinds of extra schooling and practiced. And
well, we're used to it. We've been doing this for 8 years now, seven,
I was being
eight. I don't know.
Sarcastic.
Oh, okay.
But you and I just headed over to Greeley one day, and said,
we just walked in the studio and started recording. But there are people who freak out when they come in here and start talking into the mic. They get all nervous. Next week, we will be introducing a new member of the team, I guess you could say, the team being the Retirement and IRA Show team. We've featured Justin Fundalinski a few times. Justin is our go-to guy in the office for taxes. He's getting his enrolled agent designation, as we spoke about. And he looks at tax planning and tax preparation, Chris, from a retiree standpoint. That's the big thing that our listeners need to understand. I think what sets our show apart and what sets us apart as a firm is we truly do retirement planning. Everything we do is geared towards distribution planning, not accumulation planning, but helping people go through the transitional phase, which is where they're moving from accumulation planning to distribution planning, living off of their assets. That's usually people in their 50s and early 60s, to full-blown retirement planning, which is where we show people how you actually now spend your money. And that's the hard part. I often use here in Colorado the analogy of hiking and climbing a mountain. It doesn't even have to be Mount Everest. I'm just talking a regular hike where we might hike up here in Colorado. We don't think anything of it. We'll hike to 11, 12, 13,000 feet and call it a day and then go home. But more people are injured not climbing up the trail, getting down the trail. That's where most people have died climbing Mount Everest, to borrow from that again, die on the way down, not the way up. Saving for retirement is easy. It truly is. The industry likes to make it sound incredibly complex, but Vanguard has proven it's easy, and they've whipped the pants off of most active managers if you just buy and hold a portfolio, Chris. Just buy it, hold it, and keep management fees low. You're going to whoop the competition. Vanguard showed that. Because accumulation planning is easy. Buy, hold. If the market drops, buy more. It's a buying opportunity, Wall Street usually says. You don't tell a 75-year-old whose portfolio is down 30%, this is a buying opportunity. It could devastate their retirement. Distribution planning is totally different. Yet all too often, people use accumulation planning rules to manage a distribution portfolio. So we look at everything through the eyes of distribution planning, including the way we do taxes and view taxes. We've talked about the golden tax window is your euphemism. I call it the tax hole, and Justin calls it the tax void. But that period of time between retirement and 70 and a half, when you no longer have income discretion, from retirement to 70 and a half, you are in control. Not you personally, Chris, but you as the person are in control. You can decide if you're going to turn Social Security on. You can decide if you're going to take money out of your IRA. You have a little bit more income discretion at that point in time. But at age 70, and especially by 70 and a half, required minimum distributions begin from all your retirement accounts except for Roth accounts. Your Social Security is turned on. You don't have to turn it on. They're not going to hold a gun to your head and say, hey, take this money. But I think you'll agree you're pretty foolish if you don't turn it on by age 70. They're not going to grow it anymore. So you start to get your pension income, you get your annuity income, you get your RMDs, you get your Social Security. At 70, you don't have any more income discretion at that point. So the time to do great planning, the time to be very proactive, is the period of time from retirement to 70 and a half. For some people, Chris, that period of time might be 6 months if they retire at 70. Or it could be 10 years if they retire at 60. So our job, especially on the tax planning side, is to help project to people what that tax window is going to look like, what their RMDs, required minimum distributions, their other taxable income sources of Social Security, pension, annuity, interest, dividends, whatever the case may be. What type of tax bracket are they going to be in retirement? What type of tax bracket are they in right now? What is their tax void going to look like? And we start to make determinations, Chris, if there's an ability to do conversions. That's what we're getting at. We'll talk about some conversions. We had an email question on that. But that's how Justin approaches tax planning. Well, the person we're going to interview, not interview, well, I guess we're going to interview him, we're going to talk to him. The person we're going to introduce next week, supposedly, he's going to try to make it in, is a new addition named Brandon Rains. Brandon is the new Pete. I guess we'll call him Pete Jr. Or just Jr. Actually, that's Justin's nickname, though, is Jr.
How about Brandon?
Yeah, I suppose. Call him Mini Pete.
Can't he just be who he is?
Well, everybody's got to have a nickname.
You don't have a nickname.
What do you mean I don't have a nickname?
What's your name? You have a nickname on the show?
No, not on the show.
Exactly.
You don't have a nickname. Well, Baby Huey's your nickname.
So you need one before you're giving them to everybody else.
Okay.
By the way, did you join AARP?
Negative. Did you? Because you turned 50.
No, and that's why it came up. I received a nice letter in the mail saying, congratulations, you now can join AARP.
No, I never joined.
And I'm really nervous about being inundated by all the marketing material, because that's pretty much what they are, is a marketing engine combined with a lobbying group. That's my sense.
AARP ruined it for me when they did not come out against the massive changes to Social Security, which we preached about on this show, have impact far more people than helped. I don't think it's helped anybody. And
no, it didn't extend the viability of Social Security
at all.
A day.
No.
So
I was against them there, and they showed their politicism. I never talk politics on this show, but if a Republican president came out with those proposals that the Obama administration came out with, AARP would have been protesting in the streets till the cows came home, and it never would have seen the light of day. Instead, they came out in total support of it, said it was going to strengthen Social Security, and this was the best thing ever for their members. They cut benefits to their members. So it just ticked me off. You got to take the politics out of everything. This country is too divided, and they look at everything through left and right, and they got to stop doing that. That was a terrible thing politicians from both sides of the aisles did. You and I agree they passed it in the dead of night. Mm-hmm. It didn't get to any debate in Congress. And the AARP came out in total support of a cut in benefits to a lot of their members. Mm-hmm. And when that happened...
Mostly women,
I said,
by the way.
Mostly women, yes. Mm-hmm. I said, no more. I says, I'm done. They're not getting anything from me. So, no, I don't belong. Okay, if they straighten out and stop being so damn political, maybe I'll start considering them again. So, anyways, who are we going to introduce? Brandon. Brandon Raines is the new Pete Scott. He is actually Peter's mentee. Peter is his mentor. Peter Scott.
I hate that word. I don't know what it is.
Mentor
no,
or
I don't
mentee?
Hate. Mentee. Sounds like manatee to me.
Yeah, it does sound like manatee.
So, it's not. I guess hate is a strong word. But
that could be his nickname.
Every time I hear that word, it makes me cringe because I immediately in my mind is a picture of a manatee. And manatee, some people find them cute. They're actually kind of big, ugly, hippo-looking things. Well, and
that could be his nickname, manatee.
Then we'll have to explain it every time.
But anyways, Brandon did ask if he could start coming on the show next Tuesday, and I said sure. So next Tuesday, we will not answer any email questions. The Journal of Financial Planning last month had a little article, you probably saw it, Top 10 Mistakes Your Clients Make with Their Estate Plan. So I thought, well, this will be a good, they're real basic things, but I know Brandon can opine on them a bit. So I thought we would do that show next week. And introduce our listeners to Brandon Raines of the Raines Law Firm. Peter recommended him. We've met him several times. We've chatted with him. He seems like a competent, young, new estate planning attorney. He is not at Pete's caliber. He'll admit that. Pete has 43 years experience. Brandon has 3. So he's got a little bit of catching up to do. But Pete is going to come in and do the show with Brandon on certain days, and they're going to get into deeper topics. But Brandon is going to make an appearance on next week's show, so that should be hopefully interesting for our listeners as well.
Mm-hmm. I don't think I look like Baby Huey. There's a picture right here.
Oh, no, you kind of look like Baby Huey.
First of all, he has hair.
I think that's feathers. He's a duck, isn't he?
It's parted. I don't think that's feathers. He is a duck. I don't think I look like a duck. I don't wear diapers. What part of Baby Huey do I resemble?
His physical attributes.
I'm the shape of Baby Huey. Is that what you're telling me? Wow.
I didn't necessarily say that.
Well, that's got to be what it is. I was thinking of a different character when you were saying
that. I was thinking, actually, so I probably have the character name wrong. It's a Looney Tunes cartoon. It's a three bears. You've got a mama bear, a papa bear, and a baby bear, but the baby bear is huge, and the papa bear is really small, and I think the papa bear's name is George. And then there's the mother bear.
Why don't you go on with our first email, and I'll look that up. I don't know what
I don't know how you're going to look that up.
I have my ways.
Next week, folks, we will introduce you to Brandon Raines and do that show. So we have a couple of email questions that I want to get into or want to start viewing. This first one is kind of a long one, but we haven't answered it yet, so I do want to jump into that one. It's one that I didn't tell you about yet, Chris. It came in.
This guy?
Yeah, that's him. Who's he?
I'll have to look it up. So the dad and the one son are playing cards, and then there's the large baby bear. He has a lot of hair, too. I have no hair. Have you not noticed?
That's what you and Brandon have in common. I don't know. You guys are both racing down the first-to-be-bald race.
I get it. It means I have a lot of testosterone.
But what stinks for Brandon is he's 20 years younger than you.
I've been balding for a while. Henry Bear, that was Papa.
Oh, Henry.
Mama, Junior okay. Bear. His name Junior. Is Junior Bear.
Okay, so you look like
so
Junior
I look
Bear.
Like Junior Bear. I get it.
We can put that on the Facebook page, and people can vote if they think you look like that.
I think I want to vote.
Okay, so let's get to this email question first, if we shall, Chris.
Yep, I'm ready anytime.
It came in on January 27th.
We're a little behind.
this one, yes, I just kind of found it in my piles of paper here on my desk. So I do apologize for this listener for the delay in answering this question. In fact, it's so far long ago, it was still when you were pleading for West Virginian questions. He put, question from California, sorry, not from West Virginia. And we do have California already, so we don't have a new star to add there. For those people who don't know, Chris is keeping track of every state we get an email from. We're trying to fill the United States. We have more than half filled, but for some reason, the Northeast has come to a grinding halt. So he is still looking for an email from Maine, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, and Delaware. Mm-hmm. So if you're listening from any one of those four states and could send us an email, Chris would greatly appreciate it. Okay, so it begins. Hi there, Jim and Chris. I'm a big fan of the show and stumbled on it quite randomly on iTunes last year when I was trying to learn about retirement planning. And now, listen often through iTunes. Starting last year, I have been spending a lot of time thinking of saving for retirement and making sure my goals are well thought out. My wife and I currently don't have an employer plan. So we have decided to max out our contributions every year to a traditional IRA. And we have saved around $190,000 between the two of us. We are both 35 years old and have been contributing every year. So let me give them some kudos. I'm going to stop right here. If they have amassed $190,000 in IRAs, he didn't say if the $190,000 is just in IRAs, but if they've amassed $190,000 and they're both just 35, they're doing really good. They're saving a lot of money. Good start. Very good start. Okay. So he continues. I think that this year we are going to contribute to Roth IRAs instead of the traditional IRA while we still make under the specified joint amount. So all their money is in a traditional IRA, Chris, he's saying. And he's thinking this year, because they're at $190,000 of income. The max they can make, I don't have the number directly in front of me. I think it's $194,000 as a married couple. If they earn more than that, they're not going to be able to contribute into a Roth.
Right.
Now, if he contributes to a Roth and they are at $190,000, I do want to warn him, if that's his gross income, he may not be able to contribute the full amount.
It's phased out.
It's phased out. Mm-hmm. So he's going to have to pay attention to that, but he does not have a Roth IRA, and he wants to start getting some money in a Roth. Mm-hmm. So he continues. A couple of weeks ago, there was an email you answered talking about taking funds out of an IRA account and a Roth IRA at the same place, and it seemed to have its complications later on. That person was with an employer and didn't have a choice to have their assets in different places. Let me stop here because I remember that radio show in that email. This listener has it slightly off. This was a person who had money at his employer. He had money in a traditional IRA.
No.
Excuse me.
401k.
401k. Mm-hmm. He had some money in a Roth 401k. And he had some after-tax contributions to the traditional 401k. So he had three different types of contributions. Traditional, deducted IRA, Roth, excuse me, 401k contributions. Traditional Roth 401k contributions. And non-traditional after-tax 401k contributions. So he had after-tax money, pre-tax money, and Roth money, all in his 401k. He was wondering, because everything was coming on one statement, it was confusing him, and we were telling him that the traditional IRA, traditional 401k, and the Roth 401k were being accounted for, Chris, separately.
Yes.
And that was his concern. He was
worried about them being prorated as he took them out.
Yes. So when we come back, I'm going to finish this new listener's email and talk a little bit more about the case he's referencing, because he's asking, a very simple question, but I think he's making it far more complex than it truly is. So we'll get to that when we come back.
Sounds good. That music means we're at our first break. And after this first break, we're going to hear, as usual, a top song from 1935. This example of a hit song from 1935 is from a popular composer and band leader who died young in an auto accident, cutting short what was looking to be a bright career. So we'll find out who that was, what song it is, right after this short break on the Retirement and IRA Show.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com and click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security benefit.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. That fine tune was With All My Heart by Hal Kemp and his orchestra. Kemp and his band were one of the most popular bands in the 30s. He was featured on many radio shows for NBC and CBS, including the Lucky Strike Magic Carpet Show, Pennzoil's Parade of Movies, and Good Gulf Oil Program. All those programs back then were sponsored. I didn't hear anything. I was looking forward to some comment about the auto accident, but didn't get it.
I probably wasn't paying attention. I was looking at other things.
That's all fine. So we heard
what auto accident?
One of the top songs. Well, this person, Hal Kemp, from The Hint, died young in an auto accident, cutting short his what looked to be promising career.
Gotcha.
So I'll have to ask Tina if she has more details about that, because I'm curious. Because I've heard of Hal Kemp. Didn't realize he'd been killed in an auto accident, though. But we look back to 1935. That's the year Social Security started. That's now a long time ago. It'll be 82 years now. In August, it was August of 1935 that the Social Security Act of 1935 was signed into law. And it's still with us today. Long-running program. So welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. Picking up where we left off, Jim was discussing an email we'd received. This was from a young couple in their 30s who had amassed about $190,000 in traditional IRAs between the two of them. But we're considering making a contribution to a Roth IRA, and had heard a previous radio show we had done where we had a listener who had a combination at his employer of traditional 401k holdings, Roth 401k holdings, and after-tax traditional 401k holdings, which are probably the rarest of the three of those things, but do happen. And that original listener had sent us an email asking about when we take money out, how is it going to come out? Is it going to be prorated, etc.? And this new listener, we're answering this email, who has the IRAs, was wondering if their situation had some kind of connection to that original email.
Correct. So if he has income between $186,000 and $196,000, I just wanted him to know these numbers, he is not going to be able to put money into a Roth IRA above $196,000. It was $194,000 last year. Now it's $196,000. So he does have to keep that in mind. If he has $190,000 right now, he has to watch these earnings limits numbers and see what he's going to actually be able to contribute to a Roth. So he has to bear that in mind. But the basics of his question get down to this. I was wondering if I should open the Roth IRA with the same provider with my IRA. I was wondering if I should consider another provider in order to avoid complications of having an IRA and a Roth IRA with the same company. Do you think that would be beneficial? What are your thoughts? I'm going to stop the email there and tell him my thought is, don't worry about it. Yeah. It is totally different what you're doing than what this person had.
Right.
This other person had one employer plan. He only had one statement. He was confused because the one statement showed traditional 401k contributions, after-tax 401k contributions, Roth 401k contributions. It was all showing up on one statement. He thought he had one statement. He thought he was going to have to be victimized, not victimized, but held to what is known as the pro rata rule, that he would not be able to take just money out of his Roth 401k. He'd have to take equal amounts from all three groups. And we told him, no, you can take it from one account. Even though you're seeing it as one big account, you actually have two accounts, a traditional 401k and a Roth 401k. We then went on to explain to that listener that the traditional money that contained pre-tax and post-tax 401k money, that will be prorated. But they are not going to prorate between the Roth 401k and the traditional 401k.
Which is more similar to the situation this listener is proposing.
Correct.
Where they'd have a Roth IRA and a traditional IRA. Even if the same custodian, that's perfectly fine. And I would argue, for simplicity purposes, if he's trying to keep things simple, have them both at the same custodian, because then it makes it real easy to do a conversion from the traditional to the Roth, see them both by, you know, having one login and seeing them both in one spot. If anything, it's more straightforward having them at the same custodian. If you intentionally set up two at different custodians, you're allowed to do so, but now you're managing two completely separate groups of information and logins and statements and all this kind of stuff. So,
yeah, so I think he should be considering opening at the same custodian if he likes the custodian, because it will be tremendously easier. Yeah. So I wanted to point that out, and then his email continues. Mm-hmm. Also, while maxing out contributions is a good start, I would also like to contribute more. What do you recommend for someone in my position to do once we have maxed out our contributions for the IRA/Roth IRA?
Las Vegas.
And we don't have an employer plan. Should we open a brokerage account, open a non-retirement account, and just deal with the taxes? Overfund my index universal life insurance policy and use that for the tax-deferred growth, or something else? Thanks, guys. And he signs his real name, but of course, to protect his privacy, we are going to call him George.
Just what I always wanted, my own little bunny rabbit. I will name him George, and I will hug him and pet him and squeeze him.
I'm not a bunny rabbit.
Okay, so
I applaud him for the goal of trying to save more, because especially if he's getting into the types of incomes we're talking about, the limits on IRAs, that is limiting his retirement. If he thinks that, some people look at it this way. They think, oh, gee, if I max out my contribution, I'm all taken care of, because I've hit the ceiling. That's the most I can put in. For many people, that's not going to be nearly enough at the end. Now, the good news for them is they're relatively young, so they might be on a path, and this is something that they would want to look at either on their own or with maybe some help, a path that will set them up. If you look at their whole situation with Social Security and these maxing out their IRA contributions, but I suspect if their earnings have already in their 30s gotten to the point where they're worrying about exceeding the limit to be able to do a Roth contribution, that they've got pretty good incomes and will create a standard of living at a certain level that they want to maintain as they retire, and will probably have to have more saved than what they can get by just simply maxing out their IRA contributions. So, more directly to his question, what do you think?
Well, I agree totally with what you had to say. What I would encourage him or counsel him on is the same thing. At least he's thinking outside the box. He's going to max out his IRA. He realizes he's got a lot in an IRA, $190,000. He's only 35. He has no tax diversification right now. Mm-hmm. That's his problem. Everything he is doing, he's only 35. Everything he is doing now as a 35-year-old is just sticking the tax bill to the 70, 75, 80, 85, 90-year-old him and his wife. They're not avoiding the taxes. They're delaying the taxes. What we call tax diversification, to me, all boils down to flexibility. He doesn't get into when he's going to retire. And at 35, he probably doesn't have any clue when him and his wife are going to retire. Are they going to try to retire early in their 50s? Are they going to work well into their 70s? It's way too soon for them to tell.
I'd like to retire at 50.
Yeah, that would be now.
That would be last week. I missed it.
Darn.
Darn.
So what I'm trying to say is what I can tell him, what the older him, and I'm talking the 60-year-old him, is going to appreciate is options. Mm-hmm. And if they do decide to stop working, what accounts do they debit? Well, when you have everything in IRA-style accounts, whether the IRAs, 401ks, TSPs, 403bs, 457s, whatever the moniker is that describe those accounts, when you have everything in accounts that are going to be taxable when you take money out, you're not giving yourself any discretion. You're not giving yourself any flexibility. All your income comes out of accounts that will be taxed when removed. Whereas if he was to consider Roths, which he's trying to do while he still can, I am going to go out on a limb and say eventually him and his wife are not going to be able to contribute to a Roth.
No, but they could convert.
They may be able to convert if they want to, but we have to look at where their earnings are going, where their taxes will be in retirement. It may by then, as they get to what is known as peak earnings, they're only 35. Most people reach peak earnings in their 50s, and then as they enter their 60s, their earnings start generally going down in the other direction. And then when they finally retire, of course, they have limited earnings. So they're on a pathway towards peak earnings, Chris. They're already at $190,000. I don't know if that's gross income, adjusted gross income, modified adjusted gross income, taxable income. He didn't tell us, but he has $190,000 already. It's telling me that their income is only going to keep going higher as they're getting to peak earnings. And at some point in time, we may not recommend they do put money into a Roth. They're going to be better off getting the upfront income tax deduction. His problem is he's maxing out already what he can put in. So his ability to put into his IRA, his ability to get more of an income tax deduction is really going to be employer driven. He needs to find out from his employer if they're ever going to offer a retirement account. I don't know why. I'm guessing maybe he's some sort of consultant or somehow making that kind of money at a company that doesn't offer an employer retirement account just seems a little odd. So he may be a contract employee in some tech industry or something where he's getting good money but no benefits. That's kind of the game a lot of these tech companies play. They lay someone off and then turn around and say, yeah, we'll give you your old job back. No benefits. Here's your pay. You're an independent contractor. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if that's the situation he's in. If he's not in that situation, I think he should start peppering his employers to offer a retirement account. I think he should continue to try to max out the Roth while he can. But then he asks, what do I do after that? If I don't have an employer plan, I can't put anything else in my IRA or my Roth IRA, what do I do? Well, another way to look at it is I would save in a regular brokerage account. There's nothing wrong with that. That type of account has tax advantages. You're not going to let your assets grow tax deferred or tax free in the case of a Roth, but you do get what we call tax advantage. You can deduct losses on a regular brokerage account, Chris. So if some of the things he buys drops in value, he's going to have a loss there. And when he is taxed, capital gains under current laws are either going to be taxed at 0, 15, or 20. And of course, if you put the Obama 3.8% surtax in there, it's really 23.8 or 18.3 rather. And you do have to pay attention to where your cap gains tax rate is going to be, depending on where your earnings are. At his level of earnings, the Obama surtax, Obamacare surtax may be an issue. But it's still going to be taxed at less than his income. That's my point. At least right now, and especially perhaps in retirement. And the ability to use losses to offset gains is another advantage of a taxable brokerage account. And step up in basis at death, which an IRA will not receive, is another nice advantage. Not necessarily for you. You've passed away, but your beneficiaries may be able to inherit those accounts tax-free. So don't overlook regular brokerage investments. What it starts to give you, Chris, is what? Tax diversification. We often tell people there are three types of accounts you will have money in, and when you take them out in retirement, they will be taxed three different ways. Accounts where money withdrawn is always taxed as income. Accounts where money is withdrawn will never be taxed. And accounts where money is withdrawn might be taxed. So you have might be, always, and never. The never would be Roth accounts and HSA accounts if done correctly. The always will be any type of retirement account mm-hmm. that's not a Roth.
Yep.
And the never, at least if done in a qualified fashion, Roths. And it's wise to have money in all three. It's always wise to try to get in a Roth, I agree, but you do have to pay attention to current and future tax brackets. Other than that, try putting it in a regular brokerage account. I do want to take one quick second, for me that's more like 5 minutes, and talk about overfunding his index universal life policy. Mm-hmm. I would be very cautious on that, and I know we're going to get hate mail from life insurance agents across the country. We're stupid. We don't know what we're talking about. He should put no more money in the IUL. He can borrow from it. He can get the money out tax-free, yada, yada, yada. You have to watch out for these accounts. The people who sell them to you, we have nothing against them. I have never used an index universal life, but I have used a GUL, a guaranteed universal life. I tend to favor guarantees over the uncertainty and probabilities of index universal life. But you look at the illustrations of those products, they look like the best thing next to sliced bread. Mm-hmm. If you actually understand the illustrations.
Only written in Latin. And
right, because you'll never understand the small print. No one ever reads the small print. They look at the fancy-dancy illustrations. If you understand how those policies work, if you understand that most likely what is being illustrated stands a snowball's chance in hell of ever happening, and you understand the reality of these policies, they're not as good as they look. If you need insurance, you need to look at insurance as insurance, not an investment. The fact that it could grow cash value and the fact that you could borrow from it is enticing, but it shouldn't be the main aim. And unfortunately, the slick insurance salesmen use that as the main aim. Mm-hmm. We have nothing in this office against life insurance, nothing at all. Whether you want to own a traditional participating whole life policy, a GUL, a guaranteed universal life policy, a VUL, a variable universal life policy, or an IUL, an index universal life policy, you best know, or a term policy, a traditional term policy, you best know how all five of those policies work. And what do you need? If this man needs life insurance and he wants to keep the policy well funded and he maybe wants to set it up where he won't need to pay premiums later in life, he doesn't talk about if he has children or not or what he needs the life insurance for, perhaps funding the IUL makes sense. If he's looking to try to grow the cash value inside an index universal life, please don't be relying on any illustration that's showing the nice, pretty 8, 9, 10, 11% average steady return that these index policies are showing. And you can't do that by law anymore. They changed the law. It was either last year or the year before. They can't do those crazy illustrations anymore. But to us, the IULs, or to me, the IULs on paper, they sound really good. But when you start peeling back the onion, there are some risks to them. The big risk is if you build up a lot of cash value in there and then started borrowing from it, and then your policy blows up, a lot of that money you borrowed tax-free is going to be taxable to you. And you have to keep that in mind, that truly the only tax-free money in a index universal life is your premiums. That's it. Anything above your premiums is going to be taxable to you unless you take it out as a loan. And that's what you have to do. You borrow from it. You're not really borrowing your money. You're borrowing the insurance company's money. They are using the cash value as collateral. That's why the insurance agent will often tell you, you can, let's just say they say, oh, you have $500,000 of cash value in here, and you can borrow $300,000, but you're still going to earn interest on all $500,000. That sounds brilliant, doesn't it?
Doesn't it?
It's like, wow, that's so great. I can borrow $300,000 of my money, and all $500,000 earns interest? This is brilliant. Where do I sign? People, wake up. They're not doing anything special. It's no different than a mortgage on your house. You have a $500,000 house with a $300,000 mortgage, and your house appreciates 5%. The entire $500,000 is appreciating. It's the same thing with an IUL. It's because when you borrow $300,000 on a $500,000 house, you're borrowing the bank's money.
Mm-hmm. And paying interest.
And paying interest on it. You're borrowing the insurance company's money. So all $500,000 of your cash value is still there. Duh. So of course it's going to earn the full amount of interest, allegedly. But you are borrowing and paying interest to the insurance company for access to your own, not in your money, but using...
To borrow against your
money. To borrow against your money. So you are going to pay interest. And that's where these policies start to blow up if you don't pay these loans back. And very few people do. Is as the cash value is being borrowed, it may be earning interest, but you ain't got access to that money anymore. And if the remaining $200,000 of cash value that I'm describing here falls because the index falls, remember, these are invested in index. Well, they're not really invested. It's going to get way too complicated. I'm going down a rabbit hole here. But it's indexed to the market. You'll never lose. You'll never hit zero on an IUL. I'll freely admit that. But there are constant fees and insurance costs that increase every year with an IUL. Whereas in a whole life policy, a traditional participating whole life, everything is fixed and guaranteed. But the costs of insurance in an IUL, Chris, go up every year. So if the costs of insurance are going up, if the portfolio doesn't perform as illustrated, eventually the policy starts debiting on itself. It starts collapsing in on itself. Right. And then you're going to be forced to put more money in because you've borrowed $300,000 of the $200,000 of cash value, and there's no cash value left. And if the cash value reaches zero, your policy just lapsed. You cannot let the cash value reach zero. So they're going to demand you put more money in, or the policy closes. And now that $300,000 that you borrowed tax-free and has accrued $80,000 of interest, I'm just making these numbers up, I don't know what it would accrue, has to be paid back or it's taxable to you before the policy lapses. If the policy lapses, there ain't no paying it back. You got to pay taxes now on it in one lump sum in that year, less what you put in. So it gets a little complicated here, folks.
And that's the point. That's the word. And this is why generally I'm not a fan of insurance products being used as an accumulation vehicle, a way to save money for something like retirement. They have their purposes, and there are people who have funded certain types of insurance policies that it worked out for them, and it's doing everything they imagined, and they're maybe in retirement, and everything's glorious. It's just the money is so sticky. It just feels like there's just all this peripheral stuff attached to it, all these rules, all these limitations, all of these gotchas here and there, that it's just so unclean in my mind that for most people, something that's far more straightforward, basic, without all the stickiness to it, is for most people a better way to go. You brought up some perfectly valid points why someone might want to consider proactively in some type of insurance policy for certain things. Having permanent insurance needs, having kids with a certain situation. There are absolutely good reasons to use certain types of these policies, but a lot of these, when you start, again, peeling back the onion,
They just get ugly. And the thing is, remember what we always say, people? I may be talking to the younger you, but I'm advocating for the older you. This guy's only 35 years old, so he's really young. But when you start getting into your 70s and 80s, 90s, you're not going to know all this. You're not going to get it anymore. And you're going to have these loans out on these things. These things are blowing up. The guy who sold it to you is long gone or dead himself. You don't even know who the agent on the policy is anymore. The insurance company's not being proactive and telling you all these things are going to blow up. And you just hit with this surprise. It falls away from keep it simple, stupid.
For sure.
And that's the issue with them. To me, if you need insurance, buy term. If terms aren't long enough, buy a GUL. Everything is guaranteed in a GUL. And then take the premium savings you're going to have and invest it if you'd like. And yeah, I know, yada yada, you don't get it tax-free for all you insurance people who are going to call me on that. But you have to watch out because it may be tax-free if everything works out perfectly. But if it blows up, you're going to end up paying taxes on it and interest.
Yeah. Double bonus. So when we come back, we're going to hear the number one song from this week back in 1977. This band rocked the world with their European version of what disco should sound like. We'll find out who that is right after this break.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. Hitting number one on the U.S. Billboard this week in 1977 was Dancing Queen by the Swedish rock group ABBA. The song was written by band members Benny Andersson and Björn Ulvaeus. The band name, some of you probably know this, it's an acronym that was created from the first letter in each of their names, Anifred, Benny, Björn, and Agnetha. ABBA is also the name of a national fish canning company in Sweden, but they allowed the band to use it. That was nice, free advertising for the fish. The song was first performed in 1976 as a tribute to Queen Sylvia and King Gustav at the eve on their wedding day. I didn't know that. That was a fun fact.
Hence,
the microphone needs to be on.
Hence, Dancing Queen.
Oh, I suppose so. The working title of their song was Boogaloo.
Nah.
I'm glad they changed it to Dancing Queen. By the way, do you recall the difference between an acronym and initialism?
Yes, an initialism, and an acronym.
Like FBI.
That's an initialism.
That's not an acronym.
Whereas ABBA is an acronym because it's the word itself.
We pronounce the initials as a word itself. Yes, ABBA. We don't say A-B-B-B-A. That'd be too many B's, but A-B-B-A. We actually say ABBA, but we don't say FABI for FBI.
No.
But everyone just calls them all acronyms.
See, now an IRA could go either way.
Well,
because you say IRA?
I don't.
Or IRA?
I never say IRA.
A lot of people do.
I know.
So that could be an initialism or an acronym. The amazing things you learn on the Retirement and IRA Show. Okay, so we do all these songs for
those... Go down that road already?
at some point in time, we have to say why we do this.
Yeah, but what if there isn't something to talk about there?
Oh, does one not have a update on what's new on Help with My Social Security?
I didn't realize until earlier today it was Tuesday.
I will gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today.
Yeah, I'll gladly
write a blog post
for you next Tuesday. Yeah, I don't know what, but you can say what you want to say.
All right. Well, I'll explain anyways why we're doing this music, even though Chris isn't playing along. All the songs we do for our new iTunian listeners tie in somehow to Social Security. We have a blog called helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. It gets updated weekly. Sometimes a week is missed every now and then when someone doesn't realize there's a blog to do. But we try to update it every week with a little tidbit of something new on Social Security. And it is a written blog and an audio blog. And it you can either listen or read it. And it just walks you through every week with a short little 10-15 minute snippet on a different aspect of Social Security. It's a really neat blog, and it's helped hopefully a lot of our listeners get a better understanding of Social Security. So as a lead into that update that's supposed to be in the next segment, we use these songs. The first song that we play is from 1935, and we chose that because that's the year Social Security was created. I believe it was August of 35, Chris, correct?
Yes. I forget the day.
So it was created in August of 1935, and that's why we lead in with a song from 1935. Then you just heard a top hit from 40 years ago, because when Social Security first was created, they used a calculation called 40 elapsed years in determining your Social Security. We've spoken about that before. Next segment, we're going to lead in with a song from 35 years ago, another top hit from 35 years ago, because today Social Security uses a calculation called 35 computation years for determining your Social Security benefit. And then we're supposed to lead in and actually give you an update on what's new on Help with My Social Security. I wouldn't bank on the update too much on this show right now, but we're still going to continue to do the songs.
I do have an update. It was August 14th of 1935. Franklin D. Roosevelt signed the Social Security Act of 1935 into law.
Excellent.
August 14th.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we have another email question we're going to get to. Also, in the previous email, I think I answered all his questions. Notice I didn't say definitively if he should or shouldn't put money into his IUL, his Index Universal Life. I'm going to leave that up to him and his insurance agent to make that determination. I just don't want to say blanketedly, Chris. That's a word, blanketedly.
I'll let that one go.
Thank you. I don't want to say with a blanket recommendation. How's that? Better?
Better.
I don't want to say with a blanket recommendation to go ahead and do it, because there are a lot of moving parts to that product. And if you don't know all the moving parts, it could come back and bite you in the hiney. That's all I want to say. And I also want to say for any insurance agents out there, I get it. These products can be good. IULs may have their place. You don't have to get a hold of us and say you shouldn't have talked so bad about them. I'm not talking bad about them. I just probably spend a little bit more time pointing out the negatives, Chris, than the people selling them. That's all.
Blanketly.
Blanketly.
That's the preferred version.
I was close.
Close, yeah.
All right. Speaking of being able to pronounce things.
Pronounce them?
Yeah. Say them correctly.
Pronounce them or pronounce them?
Pronounce.
Okay. Yes. What about pronouncing things?
What did I say?
Pronounce.
You sure?
Sure. I have it on tape.
Hmm. Speaking of pronouncing things correctly.
Yes.
Lone Star George has accepted my challenge.
Oh, the pronunciation challenge.
The pronunciation challenge. For those longtime listeners or regular listeners, know there's a gentleman in Texas. We promptly got to his email, 9 months after sending
He sent an email with a number of questions.
There was a lot of questions.
Some complications involved, yes. Some detail.
So anyways, we finally got to it, answered it all. But in between waiting for us, he, I guess, found humor in the fact that yours truly occasionally mispronounces a word, especially a word with an M and an N in it. And if the M and N are far away from each other, it's no problem. But when you the closer they get together, the harder it is for me to pronounce the word.
Correct.
So he kind of revels in that. And he sent Chris at one point in time a recording of some Nemo fish or something who couldn't pronounce the town he grew up in. So
it wasn't a town. He's a clownfish, and clownfish live in, you know, that thing in the ocean that has the little fingers that go up, and the clownfish kind of goes inside the fingers?
No.
What's that called?
I have no idea. I thought it was the fish's town. He doesn't live in the town? Where are you from, fish? I'm from...
Are you kidding? Are you being serious?
I never saw the movie, so it's not his town.
No, it's called biology. Where do clownfish? You know what a clownfish is.
I know what a clownfish. We had one in the fish tank.
Right, and where did it live?
In the fish tank.
And it hid it where?
Behind the rock.
Well, when it wasn't behind the rock, it would play in that thing with the fingers.
Coral.
No. Here, listen to the clip.
All new explorers must answer a science question.
Okay.
You live in what kind of home?
In an anemone.
Okay, don't hurt yourself. Welcome aboard, explorer.
He doesn't say you live in what town. He says you live in what kind of home. They live in an anemone.
An anemone.
Which is that thing that sits on the bottom of the ocean and has those kind of fingers that go up and they have stingers on them. So most animals stay away. It's a defense mechanism.
Except the clownfish.
But the clownfish is immune to it, and it likes to be in there because it's a good, safe place because other animals don't mess with the anemone, and they've combined into a
symbiotic relationship. I remember symbiotic relationship.
Perfect.
So anyway,
that's what an anemone is.
An anemone. You like that, huh? Wow. I've been practicing.
Wow.
So Lone Star
George
is in trouble.
Watch out. Yeah.
So
that was only one of about 12 of those.
He sent an email out to me thinking I was going to
read it on the air.
And it was an apology email for sending Chris that soundbite of the fish who can't pronounce the town he grew out of, the plant he lives in. So
it's an animal.
It is?
Yeah. It's like coral.
Looks like a plant.
No.
Whatever. So anyways, wherever this little silly fish lives, he sent this email out, and Chris has been reveling, and every time I muff up a word, he plays that little soundbite.
It's part of my regular rotation,
it's
though.
It's kind of your repertoire. Mm-hmm. So anyways, Lone Star George kind of dared me to read that email he sent on the air. Mm-hmm. So I called him out on his dare and said $100.
I think 150.
No, it was 100.
Oh, I thought it was 150 for some reason.
No.
Okay.
I'm betting him 100 and he has to pay 1,000.
Oh, okay. Get it.
I don't know if you remember that part. So anyways, I bet him $100 that I could read said email over the air flawlessly. Mm-hmm. And if I did, he would have to donate $100 to a charity of my choice. If I muff up a word, I will donate $100 to a charity of his choice. Mm-hmm. And he has accepted our bet.
And he's named the same charity. So
he has.
The good
Larimer
news is
County Humane Society is going to get $100
one way or another.
Yep. Whether I pass this or not.
Perfect. Which they're building a new facility, so I'm sure they could use the money.
They could. And we will do that on a future show. I have not practiced enough of the words. You can tell I have practiced anemone.
Luckily, Jim is a bachelor, so when he goes home at night, he can stand in front of the mirror and read this paragraph over and over and over again. The challenge is, I'm not there to correct you.
No.
So how is it that you are going to practice? It's like, if you practice it the wrong way, you're actually doing more harm than good. So do you have an editor?
I've bounced the words off of Justin, and he tells me if I'm close.
You live with Justin now?
No, here in the office.
You're taking up office time practicing.
Hey, we've got $100 on the line here.
Oh, my gosh.
So when I feel ready, we will proceed with the challenge.
This might be a good pickup line for you.
Pickup line?
You say, hey, would you mind coming over to my place? I need to practice some complicated words on you. And you can tell me if I'm saying them right.
Oh, yeah, that'll work wonders.
I bet they'll have never heard that before.
No, that'll be a line most women have never heard.
Might work. You never know.
Sad thing, it's the truth.
Yeah.
But then she probably won't want to date me because, again, it's not so much the anemone.
Wrong.
Oh.
You were doing so well.
It's not. I've reverted?
Yes.
Oh, damn it. See, I got to practice
more. Slid back down the slope.
Anemone.
Nope.
Hmm. Well, it's not so much that word because we know I can ace that word. I aced it before.
You got it. It's 2 out of 4.
It's the last word. Third to the last word.
Anonymous?
No.
Anonymity?
No. If you put that word in here, I'd be screwed. He didn't put that word in here.
Abominable?
No, that word.
Anti-just...
Third
phenomenal?
Word from the end.
Oh, synonymous?
That one.
Synonymous is going to catch you up?
Yeah, that one is a toughie for me. But anyways, so when I feel I'm ready, I will attempt to read this on the air.
Will it be this year?
We put no time limit on this, so when I feel ready, I will attempt to read said email.
Okay. Well, the Laramie Humane Society will be around at any time, ready to take your donation.
Okay. All right, so let's get back into this next email that came Sunday, March 26th. So we're right on top with this one.
Oh, for sure. Sure you don't want to push that one off?
Oh, I actually got notes and everything written on this one.
Okay.
And a little highlighting. There's all sorts of stuff going on in this email.
So you've had time to ponder it and write things down. I just have to react spontaneously.
You react spontaneously. I'm going to move forward on this.
Okay, go ahead.
What is neat on this one? Is when you came with me to the Retirement Income Summit a couple of years ago and Natalie Choate spoke.
Yes.
Her suggestion can apply to this.
No way.
Yes way. You know the suggestion
we've always
I'm
been waiting for the day.
You know the one I'm talking about.
I know. Well, there's just one thing that we've always been waiting for.
We have
find
it.
Some. We have it?
We have
it. Oh, I'm excited. Go ahead.
Okay.
Start reading.
So he begins. Hi, Jim. I just started listening to your podcast a month ago, and I'm hooked. Your podcasts are informative, and you and Chris make for a good and entertaining team. I was listening to your podcast regarding over-contributing to a Roth IRA, and I have a situation, and I'm not sure what to do. He says, my issue. My wife and I, we are both, and a little squiggly line. Does that mean over, under, equal?
About.
Oh, is that, that's not an about sign.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little squiggly line.
Mm-hmm.
The about is that at thing.
No.
No?
No.
Oh. Okay, well, my wife and I are this, about 40, huh?
It comes from math. This, that means equals to, right?
Yeah, I get that.
This means roughly about.
Oh, so it's about.
In all the right. neighborhood.
My wife and I are about 40 years old and contribute $5,500 each to our existing Roth IRAs in 2016. Well, we ended up making over $200,000 last year.
Oopsie daisies.
So now I am trying to figure out what to do. Both Roth accounts ended up making money last year. I started the recharacterization process to move our contributions and gain to a traditional IRA, but I'm now having my doubts. My online broker did a rough calculation and said my gain attributable to the $5,500 is $1,600 each.
Mm.
So the dollar amount moved will have to be $7,200 each.
$7,100.
Well, he wrote $7,200.
Hmm. Maybe there's an extra $100 in there for you to pay the Laramie Humane Society. $5,500 plus $1,600 is $7,100.
So unless he's rounding differently, he's just saying $72.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
He did say around $1,600.
Oh, so well, there you go.
It could be a little higher. Point is, he has around $1,600 to $1,700 a gain.
It's quite a lot of gain in 1 year on
a $5,500 contribution.
For sure.
Okay.
He did well.
He says, apparently, the calculation on the amount to be moved is based on total earnings of the account, not just the investment purchase with the money. And that's the key.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
What he's saying there, listeners, when you take money and put it into an existing IRA, he doesn't say how much he has in there, but let's say there's an existing IRA with $100,000 in it, and that $100,000 is invested in an aggressive investment.
Mm-hmm.
And he puts $5,500 in also, and it just sits there in cash. Now he clearly put more in than he could in his deductible IRA. He needs to get it out of there. He was thinking of recharacterizing it from a deductible, from a Roth IRA to a non-deductible IRA. But you must remove the $5,500 contribution plus any earnings minus any losses
attributable to that piece. But that's where the cream in the coffee situation comes in.
So all the other money, that $100,000 that was invested aggressively, and let's say it doubled to $200,000. I'm making this all up, but you could get an aggressive investment that doubles. Mm-hmm. The proportional amount of that doubling has to also be moved. And that's what I think he's running into here. That's what he's saying.
Exactly what he's saying.
Apparently, what he says is apparently the calculation is based on the total earnings of my IRA, not just what the invested amount earned.
Right. They don't keep track of it like that. They don't look at the individual pieces you put in and track, oh, this one went to buy this and that other contribution went to buy that. It all mixes together, that cream in the coffee situation. So they say now everything's mixed together, and now if you need to pull out a little bit of it, it's cream and coffee together. It's going, you've got to prorate everything. So he's absolutely right, and hopefully his broker is doing the calculation properly, and everything he's mentioning leads me to believe that they are. But
and the opposite situation, listener, mm-hmm. and Chris, could have happened. Mm-hmm. There could have been a massive loss in the portfolio. Yep. His $5,500 might have still been sitting there in cash, and his online broker would have said, okay, you only have to move $3,300. Mm-hmm. If there was a loss attributable as well, he would move or recharacterize less. But that's not what happened here. He has more. So then he goes on, my dilemma is that I'm not sure if I should recharacterize the contributions or do something else. My long-term plan is to take advantage of the backdoor Roth contribution. I believe these are my options. Okay, it's a backdoor Roth conversion. No, contribution. He's right on that. I believe these are my options. He wants to try to get the money into a non-deductible IRA and then do a conversion.
Right.
Now, he obviously, well, I can't say obviously, he doesn't tell me if he has an existing IRA or not. So I have no idea. Let's just assume he doesn't. He doesn't tell me if he does. So he's trying to get the money, Chris, out of the Roth into a non-deductible IRA and then convert it.
Right.
So he starts to list option one and option two. I'm not going to read them because, number one, they're about a paragraph in length each. And number two, they're wrong.
And he needs option three.
He needs the correct option. Mm-hmm. So the options that he wrote, he knows just enough about IRA and Roth IRA rules and recharacterization rules to get in trouble. And if I read, I'm worried if I read these options, I'm going to confuse our listeners because he writes them as if they are correct, but he's got some problems with them. So one of the things I do want to point out to him, though, under option two, which again, I'm not going to read, he writes, Chris, I can move our Roth contributions and move them to a regular investment account. In other words, not put them in a deductible IRA, a non-deductible IRA rather, but just take them out. Removal of excess contribution. Just remove them, which he can. And we're going to talk about that. I would then pay the tax and 6% penalty on the $1,600 gain. I want to point out to him he's 100% wrong on that. The 6% penalty tax is due on the excess contribution, $5,500. Right. A 10% penalty tax would be owed on the $1,600 of gain as well as income tax. But the 6% penalty tax is assessed on the actual $5,500 excess contribution. And that's only if he does not remove the money, the penalty, if he does not remove the money by October 15th of this year, 2017.
So he can avoid the penalty completely.
The 6% penalty.
Right, that 6% penalty by acting before October 15th.
But he will not avoid, if he takes that out as a withdrawal of excess contribution, he will still have to pay taxes on the $1,600 or $1,700 of gain that he has. He'll have to pay income taxes and a 10% penalty. The 6% penalty, that, folks, is a penalty the IRS will assess on any excess contribution made to a Roth IRA or a traditional IRA. If you put in more money than you're supposed to, they give you until October 15th of the year following the contribution to remove it. You remove it either by recharacterizing it or physically taking it out. He will not pay taxes on the removal of the excess contribution because in this case, it is a Roth IRA and he never deducted those on his taxes. So the 6% penalty tax is only going to be owed if he does not remove the $5,500 from each Roth IRA by October 15th of this year. The $1,600 will be subject to a 10% penalty tax, not a 6% penalty tax that he's talking about.
Only if he takes it out.
Only if he takes it out.
Not if he leaves it in there.
Not if he recharacterizes it or does that as well. We're going to get into that.
Right.
So he really has three options, and I want to go over all three options with him. But I wanted to clear the air on that one thing. His two options, option one and option two, they're just, there's enough wrong in them. I'd have to dedicate the whole show to describing what's wrong and why. I want to skip that. He wants to know what to do. He has three options, and that's what I want to go over. You got your little finger on the button, though. Are we near a break?
We are at a minute.
Oh, so when we come back.
That'll be a good teaser.
It'll be a teaser. When we come back, I am going to tell him the three options he has and I guess the pro and con of each one and let him choose which one he should
and
do.
And one of them is genius. Sorry. Not my genius. Natalie's genius.
Natalie Choate, yes.
So, I Love Rock and Roll and Joan Jett remain at the number one spot again this week in 1982. But to be a bit different, here's the first top 10 hit from a group that provided the soundtrack music for Back to the Future. So we know who that is. That's Huey Lewis in the News. We're going to take a listen to one of his songs instead, because apparently Tina does not like Joan Jett and the Blackhearts and can't listen to them over and over and over again. How much you want to bet ABBA we get every week?
You think Tina likes ABBA?
I don't know, but we'll find out what song that is right after this short break here on the Retirement and IRA Show.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com and click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security benefit.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. That, of course, is Huey Lewis in the News with a popular song from 1982. As we look back 35 years, that is Do You Believe in Love? Song written by John Mutt Lang, Mutt being his nickname. He produced the band Clover during their Europe touring days. Despite a following, the band Clover was never able to become a commercial success. But John Mutt Lang was the guy that Shania Twain married. Just add another fun fact here. I might have known this. Huey Lewis and bandmate Sean Hopper formed Huey Lewis and the American Express. However, this was soon changed because they were being threatened by a lawsuit. Trademark issue with the credit card company.
Anybody would have known you can't call yourself Huey Lewis and the American Express.
One would think that would have been... Listen to these fun facts. Tina went out of her way on this one. Tina went above and beyond. Oddly, many of Clover's members went on to join successful acts, including the Doobie Brothers and Toto. Lang and Clover band member Alex Call went on to write successfully for others. Alex Call is best known for writing the song Jenny 8675309.
Oh, wow.
For Tommy Two Tone. Wow.
They went places.
That was quite a leap from a discussion about Huey Lewis in the news, but remember this, you may hear this song sometime in the next few weeks. I love that
so
song.
So it hits number one.
Yeah. Poor Jenny had to change her number after that radio, after that song came out.
Okay, so where we left off that I want to get into is that email question. To summarize it, we have a gentleman who had contributed $5,500 to his Roth IRA last year, $5,500 to his wife's Roth IRA last year. As they did their taxes this year, they realized they earned too much to contribute anything, and they had to take or try to make up their mind on what they're going to do. They're supposed to remove the excess contribution. So they got a hold of their online broker, and their broker said, hey, the gain on attributable to the $5,500 is $1,600. Now, it might be $1,700 only because he said he has to move $7,200. So we don't quite know if he earned $1,600 or $1,700 on the account. But irrespective, he has about a $1,600 gain on a $5,500 deposit into his Roth. He thought he had two options, and he listed the two options of what he should do. His ultimate goal, folks, is to get the money out of the Roth IRA and into a non-deductible traditional IRA, and then convert it in a backdoor conversion to a Roth IRA. That's his ultimate goal. But he's wondering the best way to do it. He was thrown for a loop when he was told he had to remove $7,200 to undo a $5,500 excess contribution.
Right.
And this is all times two because it's one for him and one for his wife.
Assuming they were, yeah.
I'm under the impression they did the same thing with the money because that's what he's mentioning.
Yep.
So what to do? He came up with two options. I don't want to get into them because both options are wrong. It's the he's just confusing a lot of the rules. He doesn't quite have it right. But I did want to explain to him one thing in option two. If you do not remove the excess contribution by October 15th, 2017, he will have to pay a 6% penalty tax. The penalty tax will be owed on the $5,500 excess contribution, not the $1,600 in gain. The $1,600, if he removes it before October 15th, will be subject to a 10% penalty tax and income taxes, but not the $5,500.
Okay. And that's only if he removes it completely.
Right. And I just wanted to clear the air on there because he thought he was going to owe 6% on just the gain, $1,600. So he was wrong on that. I just wanted to clear the air. Okay. So here are his three options, Chris. And I know you know these options, but the first option is the one he is considering. He can recharacterize the money to a non-deductible IRA.
Right.
That's option one. He has until October 15th to make up his mind on that. Mm-hmm. That's the period of time he has to. If he recharacterizes, the IRS treats it as if the money was never put into a Roth to begin with.
Right. So no penalties,
no taxes,
nothing.
It's
they say no harm, no foul. We're going to pretend like this never happened, that you did the right thing in the first place. Put this money in there. And in that case, he has to move the whole $7,200 to undo a $5,500 contribution because you have to recharacterize the contribution plus any gains, less any losses that are attributable to that prorated $5,500. So he can undo it that way by recharacterizing and get the money into the traditional IRA and no fees, no penalties, no tax.
Well, I wouldn't say
beyond the tax that he already paid on. Right.
Wait, but there will be a tax in a roundabout way. He wants to eventually convert this money to a Roth IRA. He wants to. It's in a Roth now. He knows it can't be in there. He wishes he had put it in a non-deductible IRA and did the backdoor contribution, so he still can. What he does is anytime between now and October 15th, he files paperwork with his broker, and he recharacterizes that contribution. The broker, by law, will have to move the amount contributed, $5,500, plus any gains minus any losses. Well, he already knows there is a gain. See, the let's call it $1,600. That's what he keeps writing. So there's a $1,600 gain. So his broker will have to move $7,100. Mm-hmm. So the broker will have to move. Now, he keeps saying the broker needs to move $7,200. So maybe the gain is actually $1,700. We just don't know. But so he has to move into a traditional IRA. $7,200. That money goes in there because remember, I said when you recharacterize, the IRS considers the contribution as never being made to the Roth. It went into the traditional IRA to begin with. So $7,200 now will be in the traditional IRA. If he does this before October 15th, there is no 6% penalty tax. There are no taxes due on the recharacterization. So he can recharacterize it to a traditional IRA, non-deductible. Then he can convert that to a Roth IRA. He's under the impression he has to wait 30 days. He does not. He can convert it. It's a different type of recharacterization. So it's not subject to the, I converted an IRA to a Roth IRA. I recharacterized that conversion back to an IRA. Now you have to wait. You have to wait either 30 days or till January 1st of the year following the year of the original conversion. That doesn't apply here.
No.
So he kind of put that into his option one, and he had it all bass-ackwards. Don't worry about that. You can recharacterize from the Roth IRA to the traditional IRA, and then you can do your backdoor conversion. However, to put that full $7,200 in, the $5,500 is tax-free.
Because he already paid tax on that because he didn't deduct it when he put it in the Roth, and there was still no deduction changes when he put it into the traditional during the recharacterization. However,
what we think is $1,600 or $1,700 of gain will be subject to income taxes.
Because you never paid taxes on it.
Because you haven't paid taxes on it yet. But think of it this way, listener. You're getting the $7,200 in, but you don't have to pay taxes on the full $7,200. You just have to pay taxes on the gain, $1,600, $1,700 gain.
Well, that's because you already paid taxes on the $5,500.
Because you already paid taxes on the $5,500.
Yeah.
So that's his first option. He can recharacterize to a traditional IRA before October 15th, avoid the 6% penalty tax, pay no income taxes on the recharacterization, only when he converts the non-deductible IRA to a Roth IRA will he pay income taxes, but he only pays income taxes on the $1,600 or $1,700 of gain, not the original $5,500 contribution.
Right.
Capiche?
Capiche.
Okay. So, option two, he can remove the excess contribution before October 15th. So again, before October 15th, he can remove the excess contribution as a withdrawal. Just take it out before October 15th. If he takes it out before October 15th, no 6% penalty again. There are also no taxes owed on the $5,500. Mm-hmm. The $1,700 or $1,600, we're not sure what it is, that is paid out in earnings will be taxed to him and will be subject to a 10% penalty. But that is an option. Just withdraw it. Now, I'm not really a fan of that. I'd rather he recharacterize it to a non-deductible IRA. But this is an option. He can withdraw the money, wipe the slate clean,
Yep.
and start over. And if he does this before April 15th of this year, he might have time to take $5,500 of it and put it in a non-deductible IRA as a 2016 contribution.
And we're using the April 15th here because...
It's actually April 18th this year.
True. You have until tax day each year to make a contribution for the prior tax year. So we're still in that window because as we speak right now, it is only April 8th or thereafter. So he's getting tight on time here. Hopefully he's listening live when this is going.
But you could, because he wants to get money in for 2016 and 2017. So if he did do this withdrawal of excess, and again, it makes no sense to me. He'd probably want to do the recharacterization. But he can do the withdrawal of excess if he wants, then contribute to a non-deductible IRA, and then he has the gain out. He's not going to be able to contribute the gain as well. If he wants that gain in the Roth, he is going to have to do it as a recharacterization. Out of these two, the first one, the recharacterized to a non-deductible traditional makes far more sense than withdrawing it. But it is an option we had to give him. The third option is the Natalie Choate option that Chris alludes to as being, as you said, brilliant.
Right. And Choate is spelled C-H-O-A-T-E, for those of you wanting to look it up.
Yeah, it's a tough
one. She's very well known. She's actually an attorney. She's an estate planning attorney. She just has a special focus on issues regarding retirement accounts.
Exactly. All retirement accounts, not just IRAs like Ed Slott's group. Right. She is like the female Ed Slott. She is at a level all to herself. I have seen her speak many a times. I'm actually going to Chicago in a few weeks to see her speak yet again required minimum distributions. I'm in a sick way excited to go see her talk again because you always learn things.
Yep.
So this, Chris came to the Retirement Income Summit with me several years ago. I had known about Natalie's strategy for quite some time. This was your first exposure to it. And you said, gee, I wonder if we're ever going to find a case where we're going to make this recommendation. Mm-hmm. I think you found the case because you know where I'm going.
Excellent.
Here's another option, listener. Leave the money right where it is. Don't do anything. Chill. Take a breather. Don't do anything until after October 15th. These other two items were before October 15th. Mm-hmm. Take a chill pill. Leave it in there until after October 15th.
Which will trigger
the 6% penalty tax.
Correct. On the $5,500.
Correct. If you do not remove it before October 15th, listener, you will owe 6% penalty tax on $5,500. What does that come to, Chris?
$330.
So you will owe $330 in a penalty tax. You will file Form 5329 with your tax return in 2017, which isn't due until February, March, or whatever it is of 2018. But you will file Form 5329 next year and gleefully admit to the error and pay $330. Then you will remove as a distribution. You cannot recharacterize. After October 15th, you cannot recharacterize. So what you do is on October 16th, you call up your broker and you say, you know that $5,500 I left in there? Remove it.
Right. And you were going to remove it because that 6% penalty is actually a yearly penalty. Every year you leave it in there and you don't take it out is subject to another 6% penalty.
Now,
so
he technically...
you are exposing yourself to one.
Correct.
Yes.
He technically could leave it in until December 30th of 2018 and avoid a 6% penalty. The first penalty is based on leaving it in after October 15th. Mm-hmm. Then next year, 2018, as long as he removes it by December 31st, there would be no 6% penalty.
And that's why we are removing it between October 15th and December 31st because we don't want to trigger that second
penalty. We don't want to trigger a second penalty tax.
Mm-hmm.
But notice, listener, we didn't say anything about the $1,700 of earnings.
Mysterious.
That money gets to stay in the Roth and doesn't have to come out. It can just stay in there. If you remove it before October 15th, either as a removal of excess contribution or a recharacterization, you must remove the earnings. after October 15th. This is a glaring loophole in the law that Natalie Choate has pointed out time and time and time again. After October 15th, the earnings actually get to stay in the Roth. Only the excess contribution need come out. There's no penalty on the earnings. And they stay in there. So what happens is on October 16th, you remove the $5,500 of excess contribution. Just get it the hell out of there. You can deposit it into a non-deductible traditional IRA at that time and then convert it for your backdoor Roth contribution. And that will count as a 2017 contribution. The only time he's not going to do this strategy, Chris, is if he really wants to get money in to the Roth for 2016. And it sounds to me like he is. If he doesn't have money, because he has until April 18th to put money into a traditional IRA. But technically he doesn't, because the money that he put in for 2016 is still an excess contribution. Mm-hmm. So he really can't do that. Scratch that.
Well, let me.
He is going to miss 2016 if he does this, but he gets to keep $1,700 in the Roth tax-free.
Other
minus
the
$330,
which effectively, and I did the calculation, if this is $1,700 we're dealing with, it cost him 19% to leave it in there. One time, just like if he would have paid taxes on that money one time, but he's earning so much that
he's in a much higher bracket.
So essentially, he got a one-time discount on this. Now, this works even more beautifully in Natalie Choate when she does the example. The earnings are way higher even than $1,600. The point is, for a flat $330 penalty, you can leave any amount of earnings. Could be tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars. Now, we all know that putting in $5,500, the chance that it's going to turn into $100,000 is remote at best.
Well, let me just interrupt you for 1 minute. Natalie's example, if you remember, she says, what if you had a client who was certain a stock was going to double in value?
Right.
Just adamantly certain this stock was going to do phenomenal. So on January 2nd of that year, they take $100,000 and contribute it to a Roth IRA. Way over the limit.
Right.
Massive excess contribution. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the year, it's now worth $200,000. In her example, they wait until the following October 16th. And she says it could continue growing. And now it's worth, you know, another $50,000 again on top of that. Extreme example. But what she's trying to say is he willfully pays a $6,000 penalty.
Right, 6% of the $100,000 he put in initially.
To now leave $150,000 in the Roth. Right. And then October 16th, they remove, tax-free, the $100,000 that they put into the Roth.
Which is effectively a 4% tax rate on that $150,000 of gain. Now, her example is far more outrageous, I guess, bloated numbers than this, but the numbers still work.
Yeah,
because I'm sure he's in a higher marginal bracket than 19, so he's getting a one-time opportunity for a discount on taxes on this $1,600 or $1,700 that he can get.
And
into
he
his
can
Roth.
Get the $5,500 back into the Roth right away because he takes it out on October 16th of 2017. He can put it into a traditional non-deductible IRA the same day if he wanted. Waits a few months and then converts that to a Roth IRA and it's back inside. What it will cost him doing this is if he truly wants to get money in a Roth for 2016, then he either has to do the first one or two options. Recharacterize before October 15th or remove the excess contribution.
Using Natalie Choate's method, he effectively gets in $1,600 for 2016.
Instead of
at a discounted tax rate.
Yes.
Instead of the full amount. That is that would happen here, but I want him to do it just so I know somebody who's done it.
Chris loves the strategy. But again, in Natalie's example, it's bizarre, and I confirmed it with Ed Slott. He says no, and Natalie says, of course, Natalie Cho, of course she's right, he said.
Yeah, of course she's right.
But this is the way the law is written. After October 15th, the gain doesn't have to come out, but the 6% penalty tax applies. Before October 15th, the gain must come out, but the 6% penalty tax does not apply. The listener needs to decide what's more valuable to him. And that's it's a tough call, but those are his three options. If he wants to do the one that where he removes the excess and then contributes it for 2018, excuse me,
and converts it
by October 18th of this year and calls it last year, he best get going because he's going to be in
April 18th.
Correct. But if he wants to do that one, if it's really important to get 5,500 in for 2016, obviously Natalie's idea isn't rich enough. He didn't double like in her example.
Right.
But her example is just blatant. If you really think this stock is going to do good, she said, just throw all your money in a Roth IRA, take the penalty, and you really have a long time. You have until October 15th of the following year. So as she pointed out,
you do in January, you've got 22 months. 22 almost,
months where this money can stay in a Roth and grow, and all the growth can stay inside that Roth IRA tax-free. Then you just have to pay a penalty on the excess contribution. The hard part is finding a custodian who will accept a $100,000 contribution to a Roth IRA.
True, they might block it right up front.
Yeah, they're going to say, wait a minute, you're not allowed to do this. Oh, I know, I'm going to pay the penalty. Not technically, they should accept it, but most custodians are probably going to be, no.
Well, once they take it, though, there's money that comes in that amount on rollovers. So they may not really think anything strange when they see $100,000 come in.
True.
So it might very well happen.
Unless they call and ask you, where'd this money come from?
I don't know. So in our last 10 seconds here, thanks for everybody joining us here on the Retirement and IRA Show. We'll be back with you next week as we get close to tax day. Looking forward to it. Okay. Not.
And if anybody has any questions, feel free to email us at jim@jimhelps.com. That's jim@jimhelps.com. jim@jimhelps.com, and we're here to answer your questions.
Perfect. We'll chat with you next week.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's jim@jimhelps.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.